Hello and welcome. My name is Anki, and you're listening to Improv Shine podcast.
George asks, was there a time you and or your scene partner broke out of character because you were laughing so hard? Tell us what happened. Oh, this one is very easy to answer because it happened only once in my entire 3 years of doing improv. And you can also find it online. It was actually during an episode of Improv Shine. So, what I can tell you about myself, when I play characters, no matter what they are or no matter how funny or serious they are, I rarely break it, especially not by laughing. Like, I'm really strong. That's my strong side, I think. However, when you play with someone as Steve Loader and his humor, I just couldn't help myself. This was the only episode that was edited, so I usually don't edit an episode at all. But it was just me laughing, and that's that laugh. You're just trying to get air. So the same thing was with our little scene, where I was just, even now I'm laughing because I just adore that person. He's extremely funny to me, and yeah, that was the time. So check out the episode with Steve Loader. Yeah, George, I had a lot of times when I was laughing because others did that something. So as an audience, I can recognize the humor. I hopefully made my partner laugh, although I'm laughing all the time, when I'm in a scene, I rarely laugh. Well, this may be also something to think about, isn't it?
Velvet asks, if travel was truly safe from a pandemic, what is your destination? Well, my answer is probably going to be very lame, because few years ago I decided not to plan, just to do it or shut up about it, because I'm a planner girl. I plan things, I create nice to-do lists, and the execution, the implementation never happens. So now I'm trying to empty my brain from planning and just, if I decide, just do it. So what I am already trying to do, of course, respecting all the restrictions and everything that is going on, I'm trying from time to time travel to nearby cities from Munich. So for the last 7 years, I live in Munich, and I can still say I don't know Munich, and I don't know Germany. So I would love to get to know this country better, neighborhood countries as well. But not to be completely lame, I'll tell you what makes me relaxed, and then maybe you can suggest me what. Do you hear that? It's alarm. It's always something happening here. So what I wanted to say? Oh yeah, I'll tell you what I like. I like temperature that is 25 Celsius. So it's not too warm, but it's not cold at all. And I don't like too many people. I like city things, like explore, sit at the coffee shops. But I also like empty beaches with a little air, little wind. And basically, since I'm coming from Croatia, and not only from Croatia, but from an island in Croatia, I always had this part of beach and leave me alone part every single summer, which made me realize that the peace and, you know, coming back to your senses is something that is inside job. So no matter where you are, no matter how things look around you, if you're not ready for changes, or if you're not ready to relax, and often I'm not,
there's no place on earth that could provide that for you, I think. Yeah, but there's one more catch. I don't like the actual travel, you know, the travel as sitting and going from A to B. So I guess I'm waiting for teleportation. So yeah, Velvet, maybe you can say if you have any experience, where is this undiscovered diamond, where it's quiet from not too many tourists, it's warm and there is a little bit wind, and yeah, I can fall asleep without any fears or troubles. Let me know.
I asked, what's your favorite ever improv related but offstage moment? Well, I think now first that comes to my mind is the first show, or being a part of one marathon of shows that I've done with a group called Rice Cookie. I remember we were all so nervous. It was our first time. And yeah, we did okay job. I mean, what can you expect for the first time? But afterwards, we were like, there was like 20 of us being there, supporting our team, supporting other teams. And then other people were like chatting, and we made a whole party. We were dancing and laughing and talking. And then we invited others to dance with us. And it was like a mini party after that marathon. And I just felt so, like, sense of belonging for me, it's extremely important. And just being part of that community and part of that show, it was for me spectacular. And I remember my colleague Max said to me, we will never be the same after this. And yeah, he was right. So it was not that we were later better or worse or something. We were just all different. We experienced something together. And yeah, after that, we had a few more shows. We had a bunch of workshops together, bunch of get-togethers. And yeah, from one community that I shyly entered in 2018, now I consider them my family. And yeah, so they are my life now also, not just the offstage moment or improv-related hobby. Yeah. Thanks for your question. Now I'm smiling because I'm happy.
Ian asks, what game do you really hate that others seem to really enjoy? So first, as Ari already mentioned during this comment section and questioning, this sentence doesn't make sense. As Ari replied to Ian's question, that he knows what I hate, and he was right. I don't like gibberish games. And I have to inspect this, why I don't like it. Is that something with the control? Is it... I like to provide gibberish games to participants because I've seen how much it helps with some improvisers. Like, there is one guy, when we are doing the normal scenes, he is like made of stone. He's not moving. When he finishes one sentence, I think hour goes by, and it's just like he just, I don't know, he's just like that. That's his maximum, I guess. That's how he does it. And then when he plays in gibberish, he's a different person. So that's his thing. Maybe he's too much in his head because of what should he say that makes sense, blah, blah, blah. And then when he speaks gibberish, his whole body reacts. You know, he's like more alive and way more expressive. So there's so many ways you can use gibberish, but I don't like to play it myself. yeah, but I promise I'm gonna think more why I don't like to play it. And specific games, now my rice cookie community is gonna kill me. I don't like Bunny Bunny. Bunny Bunny is a warm-up game. It's very ridiculous and therefore great for improv. But I guess I've played it too much that I'm just fed up with it. Although I must say, when I'm a participant, no one will notice that I'm fed up with it because I'm gonna, if I don't do make-believe, if I don't, scream bunny bunny and whoa whoa and whatever, then why would others? So I have I'm very motivated once someone puts me in that game, but the reasons are different. but I never do it as a workshop leader. I always skip it. I do some other games. Maybe I can tell you which one I love with the warm-ups. I like volleyball, where you divide people in two groups and they have imaginary ball, so, and they're playing volleyball. And the way they are doing it is by sending the ball by saying a name. So if I have the ball, someone says my name, and then I just like, and then I say a name and this person knows it's for them. So this is how that's something that's really physical. It's really fun because sometimes, of course, you don't know the names and you have to go to another team. Yeah, people really seem to enjoy it and the nice energy comes from it. But what else do I hate? I don't like bippity bippity bop. It makes me nervous. Yeah. But somehow I always find reasons why all this makes sense. But yeah, I have to admit sometimes I just don't like to play it. Like, I know that cleaning house makes sense, I just don't like to do it. Fernanda asks, how do you find strength to get up on difficult days? Were you talking to Frederick? Who say I get up? I call sick and I stay in bed and I watch Netflix. Well, sometimes I don't get to choose, right? If I have to work, I just have to get up and go to work. Or if my daughter wakes up before I do, I have to get up and make her, breakfast. But I think I understand what you mean by get up. It's basically whole day, not just this moment of morning. Yeah, I have no smart answers to this question. I did a little app on my phone, it's called 21 Days Challenge. And there you can find various challenges, little ones. And there was one thing that I read, and I knew this before, but I just didn't integrate it in my life. And that is, play the music that makes you happy, that makes you want to dance, that lifts you up. And this is something that I'm now trying to do because I'm very, very nostalgic person, very melancholic in times, and I love to kill myself with the sad music. And have my own, like the way in German they would say Kopfkino, so like this movie in your head. So just by doing less of that and by stop overthinking or overanalyzing, I immediately surround myself with something positive, and in this case that could be music. Sometimes for me that's just podcasts. It simply gets me going. It can also be the fact that the sooner I get up, the sooner I will drink my latte macchiato, which I adore. Yeah, the little things, as I already mentioned, the little things are the things that keep me going, I guess. So yeah, nothing too wise to say. Oh yeah, maybe one more thing. Maybe make sure that every day contains something that makes you smile, that brings joy to your life. No matter how small it is, no matter how short it lasts, just make sure that you always have a moment for that one thing that gives you energy. In my case, that is writing letters, that is listening to podcasts, that is opening packages that just arrived with new stickers and new papers and new scrapbook material. That makes me happy. Then I close the door and no one is allowed to enter until I have my moments of happiness. And colors. I love colors. Although I just wear black, I love colors. And I love watercolors, and I'm trying to learn them a little bit. Little things. Michael asks, what's your go-to opening offer? Well, Michael, the thing is, when we started this whole thing with Zoom, I had opportunity to see my face. And I noticed completely subconsciously, that I'm doing this disappointed face very often, and that leads to scenes with conflict with a partner. So not conflict in general, not conflict towards a third person, but also me and my partner. And if it's a male partner, it's usually something on this level of romance or love or whatever. So that was a little bit of a sign, a signal to stop. So I don't know. I don't know if I have an answer. What's my go-to opening offer? But I'm trying to remind myself to establish things fast, so that my whatever comes out of my mind is enriching what we created so far. And also, I'm trying to not be complete talking head, although often I am, and try to insert object work and also inspire my my partner, you know, to do it with me. Especially because I work most of my improv is with newbies and intermediate players. And they, out of fear or just out of not having experience, they just stand there. So I'm always trying to kind of do this activities on the scene, so they can also, you know, join me in this. So yeah, maybe that's my opening offer. And I like a little bit to shock people with straightforwardness and defining things out of nowhere. Oh yeah, you know what else? I love to twist things in the very beginning. So, and this is also what I have a workshop on this about twisting things that usually if people ask for a suggestion, they probably will play humans, you know, and then I come as something that is not human. Or if we got a coworker relationship, then I create a scene that is not in the office. So basically the things that people maybe don't do, especially newbies, let's say, they don't do it, they go strict, you know, if the apple is a suggestion, then apple, we're gonna eat apples, which is not bad, but I just like to twist things. So I would talk about Adam's apple or I would be a worm inside the apple or something. So yeah, I guess that's my answer.
Antonia asks, what is your greatest improv dream?
I don't know. I don't have greatest dreams. I don't know. I just wanna I just want to be happy. Also while doing improv, you know, I want to be in the moment and whatever is happening really embodied this person, this feeling, just be so in sync with my partner that, you know, it looks scripted, that it looks like this cannot be true, you know, and it could be done in my living room. It doesn't matter. But this moment when you are so in the moment, so in that it really looks truth for you and for everyone else. Maybe that's my greatest impression.
Andy asks, what is the greatest moment in my life? Andy, I don't know. The thing is, I was always and still am collector of little great moments. So the greatest, I don't know. I just don't see them like that. I can say classical things like, yeah, the birth of my child, or when I graduated university, or I don't know what. But actually, this is here, this is fact, and it's nice. But what I consider greatest is, I don't know, those little moments of happiness, little moments of joy. Like I was just today publishing one episode and just listening myself and my guest laughing. That was so nice. And receiving invitation for someone's New Year's Eve party or wedding, you know, being included in somewhere, feeling like a part of something. These are greatest moments of my life, I have to tell you. Anyone, okay, I'll tell you one. Okay, so again, I cannot call it great, but I can call it great. I love fishing. I love being on the boat and just me, boat, and the sea, which is calm. And there is a radio in the distance. And it's like everything in the world is okay in that moment. Maybe that is one of these rare moments when I feel fully relaxed and in sync with myself.
Kathy asks, how has improv affected your life altogether? Do you use yes and? Well, Kathy, I just missed time to go to supermarket because I'm recording this for the last 2 hours. So it affected me that I don't have stuff to eat tomorrow. But more than that, I think I have plenty of side effects to it. It's like I wanted to do improv, and then I got plenty of things that weren't maybe necessarily in my brain at that time when I started. For example, I wanted to do improv. I wanted to play, to perform, to maybe to brush some of my skills that I already had, or create some new that I never had. Okay, that's the thing that I wanted to do. But what did I get? You know, I got beautiful community, people who enjoy my presence, people whose presence I enjoy. I got a lot of time with them outside of improv hours, where we would go together and then eat and drink and then go to karaoke, just be together, meet in private homes, be together. These kind of things brought improv in my life, and I wasn't even aware this is going to happen. And also online, you know, there are some people that I've met online that I hold so close to my heart. It's like I just think of them and I just start to smile. And yeah, another amazing side effect. Do I use yes and? Well, you know what? I think I was always on this banter, jokey side, but now I think I'm even better at it. So whenever someone makes a joke about me or with me about me, I can always, make it one step higher, one level higher of saying, like when they're joking and provoking me, then I joke back with my own, being myself as a butt of the joke, so I say yes, and, and then I would add something that it's even more offensive about me. So it affected big deal. It was really, it's now you cannot see my face, but I'm smiling, almost crying. So I'm just gonna end this question.
Drew asks, which aspect of improv has helped the most, again, this the most, to develop good relationships in your personal life?
Well, you know what? I think this whole thing with what is the person really saying? I think this was impactful for me. So you hear person says something in life, in improv, doesn't matter. And actually what a person is really trying to say, or what is that it's left unspoken. These things I kind of recognize much more when I'm having conversations. The other day I had a conversation with my colleague who was feeling very stressful when we went with children for a walk. She felt that we haven't done a good job with that, and that I was walking too fast, they couldn't catch up. And then I, instead of trying to explain myself, and instead of trying to prove about obligation, about responsibility being on both sides, not just the person who's in front in that moment, I just try to listen, what is she really saying to me? And what I've heard, it's like I feel insecure. I feel something might happen to children. I'm having maybe also issues with me being responsible. I feel hopeless. And then instead of drooling, although I work with children, but not that small. I just try to understand her fully, and I try to find a solution how we could prevent this, instead of trying to find who's the guilty person. So I think this was something that I don't know yet actually if I brought this in my improv or improv brought this to my life, but this is something that I cherish a lot. So this is probably one of the aspects of active listening, I guess. I would say that's the aspect. Helen asks, what improv games do you play with the kids at work? So, dear Helen, I play I'm a tree, I'm a grass, I am I don't know, pile of shit on the floor. I mean, don't take this too. I just remember something from the last workshop 3 days ago. Anyhow, you know the game. Usually we call it I'm a tree, but maybe it's called somehow else. This is what I'm playing, and I try something. It's very difficult, but I'm gonna try again. You know that game where only one person walks, so the moment one person stop walking, then another person starts walking, others are frozen, right? And then you have two people at once are allowed to walk, and the others have to be still. So this is what I try to do. So I work in a kindergarten where the children they're not going to sleep, but they're going to rest after lunch. So they have this little mats and pillows and a blanket. So I tried to do it like that. It's one kid returned these stuff Now only the German words are coming to my brain. So puts it back, and then when the person sits back, then the other person gets up and do it. So like if you see someone walking and putting it where it belongs, that means you're still not on. let them finish and then you can go. So this is something that I created for for children, and yeah, it doesn't work as the way I wanted to, but it's also not too bad. Then we play, what else did we play? Crazy Eight. Oh, I love Crazy Eight. That's this when you know, like shake your right and then left hand and then leg. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And then 4 times and then 7 and then 6. Oh, it breaks such a beautiful energy. It at my work and also at improv. Love it. There might be a few. Oh yeah, what I also do with children, we make stories. So once upon a time, but not words, but sentences. So once upon a time there was a little, and then they say girl, and then I end, which is called, and then they say the answer. So we make create whole story together, like from nothing. This is what I often do. And last time we created it, and then they also acted it out in their own way. So yeah, that was totally cute. And I'm trying always to find a way how to create, how to make them, you know, more active physically. So we often play animals. When they portrayed animals or sounds or professions, so they show, you know, what like just with the body, non-verbally, some professions. Yeah, it's totally cool. It's the only thing, the problematic is there's many of them, so if you don't include them immediately, then they get a little bit bored. So yeah, well, I guess just like we do. Yeah, I'm sure there's more games, but these are the ones that come to my brain at the moment.
Damien asks, what do you want to see happen in improv this year? Well, I want to see 99 people in my jam. That was always my wish, to be 100 people in one room and they get to play every time when we go into breakout room with someone they've never played before. I can imagine 100 people dancing to the music I provide, and we just laugh and sing and dance. Love it. So, moving away from my selfish wishes. Well, let's see. I'm gonna still be selfish. So, I want that there is no more lockdown anywhere. Not in terms that we don't have restrictions and Corona is, you know, bursting. But the things get better, and that we never have to doubt if we're going to have in-person improv anywhere in the world. That is something what I would like. What I would also like, again being selfish, I would like that someone from Croatia contacts me and say, we don't have improv in Croatia, would you like to help us? And I would say, yay! Yay, I would! There is no improv in Croatia at all, as far as I know. And maybe I already asked one stand-up comedian if they would like to do a little bit of training in improv, if they're interested in, if they want. So just as, you know, starting. But we'll see. This is something that would make me very happy. And what else? I'm just gonna go with selfish wishes. there's no other wishes, I guess. I wish that the Zoom improv stays as strong as it was, this time by choice, not by because there is no other option. Because it really brought a lot of joy in my life.
I met some wonderful people. I laughed like idiot every single week, several times. And I hope that that I'll get to play now during winter again, a lot. And keep on going with selfishness. I would like to be able to afford more educations, or the other words, I would like that the theaters and others that are providing workshops are so financially stable that, you know, the prices are not too high and that they can offer always scholarships for those who cannot afford it. So that's what would make me very happy. I've been doing in the past 6 months, I think, a lot of hosting, a lot of teaching, but not so much participating. So I want to go back more into learning and being in that area a little bit more, and would love that I can be able to afford to pay for those workshops. So I think I said a lot, Damien, right? And although they are selfish, I think they can be copy-pasted to many people, so it's okay. Frederick asks, how do you continue teaching and podcasting despite having your own personal dilemmas or struggles? What drives you to teach others?
How do you know I have my personal dilemmas, Frederick? Did you read my diary?
Anyhow, it's a very good question, and I have to say a disclaimer first, and that is I don't earn living with improv, so I think a lot of burden is lifted off my shoulders on that level. So my struggles, financial struggles, are never connected with improv, so that's a good thing. Why I say it's a good thing, well, it would be probably very devastating that something you love to do, something that makes you happy as much as improv makes me happy, is something that also gives me a lot of worries, you know, how to survive, how to feed my child, or how to put, you know, food on the table. And I know some people are struggling, and I hope they all manage to adapt in these difficult times. So my personal my personal dilemmas and my personal struggles prevent me in a way that I postponed podcasting. For example, I have an episode that I've recorded 2 months ago and I don't publish it. And it's there. It's just I need to listen, write two sentences of an intro and, you know, just publish it. And I just don't do it. And this is very connected with the current state of mine. So if something is happening in my life, if I'm having issues with finding time, or I feel extremely exhausted, which I often do, then I just push everything away, no matter how big the priority it is. Is it an episode? Is it to send an important document? I just postpone everything as if it never existed. Yeah, that's my super useless superpower, postponing. And the other side, the teaching side, it's not actually influenced by any of my personal develops. Again, for the third time, dilemmas, struggles, because on one side, when I promise that I'll do a workshop or jam or when any type of session, I do it no matter what's happening in my life. So I'm very responsible like that. On the other side, teaching makes me happy. It just brings all those positive hormones on a pretty high level. So I enjoy planning. I enjoy implementing sessions online, offline, doesn't matter. And that makes me happy. And not only that makes me happy, that also brings energy to me. So maybe the answer to what drives me to teach others is exactly that. I get so much from those people. I'm learning all the time. And although I don't like to call myself a teacher because I'm doing improv only for 3 years and, you know, my observations are only mine and probably they'll change with the time, I just want to be some sort of a medium that can listen, that can observe, and that I can give my modest opinion what I think. And most of all, my workshops are there not for you to be perfect improviser, because I'm far from it, but more how to be okay with whatever you provide. So it doesn't matter how you do it. I'm very happy and very proud of you if you manage to silence your inner critic for some time, or if you're okay being yourself, if you feel that you're good enough no matter, you know, what your inner critic says. And this is what I've also seen in my workshops, that people are being open and they are trying things out that they didn't dare before, you know. And yeah, I guess that's my super useful superpower. Gorgi asks, will you do a scene by yourself? And then Drew comments, and will she take two drinks of water this time? So these two guys are the guys who know me, or at least my podcast, well enough to know that there is a scene inside the episode. And no, Georgi, I will not make a scene. I made a scene of myself. I made a scene. But I'm not going to do a scene by myself, no. And about water, yeah, I always have water whenever I make podcasts, and I never forget to mention it. So whenever I start, I say, okay, first I have to drink, like I'm gonna do now. And I don't know if you're gonna hear something, but I'm drinking now. And I use glass bottle, and it looks very much like vodka. So I always say I'm gonna drink my vodka now. And I'm trying to drink as much as I can because I eat a lot of sweets. It's another word for saying I'm addicted. And yeah, the water kind of keeps me sane a little bit. So yeah, Drew, I took a sip of water. Yes.
Hello, everyone. I'm making a special episode, and I'm going to tell you why. This last 12 months for the entire planet was different. It was difficult, and people faced death, loss, fear, sickness, so many things that we were not even considering 2 years ago. However, respecting everything that happened and not undermining the suffering or the issues, some good things also happened, and I'm dedicating this episode to those good things. And there is something I could say, umbrella title, and that's online improv. This last year, last 12 months, was way much better for me because I met amazing, amazing people, groups, communities, individuals that really helped me to grow as a person and as an improviser. So I'm going to dedicate this episode to give a shout out to them, and I'm going to provide this as a text as well if you want to look closely. Who did I mention? Although I'm sure you are already in some of those groups by now. Yeah. I just feel very thankful. I know I cannot do much for this whole thing, but I can say thanks. And I hope we will keep on meeting even when this pandemic is over.
Whit asks, what has been the most impactful thing you've learned about improv since the pandemic? Oh, I get a little bit shivers down my spine when I hear most impactful, the greatest moment. One thing that I was like, I don't know. Too much pressure. Well, there were many things. I'm answering this without thinking before, as I did my entire season of Improv Shine. So why stop now in the last episode with no preparation whatsoever? But let me tell you what comes to my mind first, and maybe that's also very impactful. I would say kindness, and the fact that I knew coming to Munich, of course, I faced with a lot of diversity in any sense. Way more than in Croatia, for example, way more than on island where I spent my my life until I was 18. But now with being on Zoom doing improv, I got even more of it, more like different people, different backgrounds, different upbringings, different point of views, whatever. And it was just like a moment for me to be aware of this beauty and also about this challenge. And I remember once, now this might not have anything to do with what I just said, I remember me being enough vulnerable to write a topic, to write a question on one Facebook group stating that I like to play horrible characters. And I also enjoy that these horrible characters get punished and, you know, remove their status, because I find that very funny. If you've listened or heard Little Britain and similar, and they are crazy characters, then you might know what I'm talking about. But, you know, those not so good people who kind of, you know, put down other people. And I find that funny because the joke is on them. It's not on those people that are being put down. And then I ask this because I think it doesn't come through as I wanted to. Actually could have contra effect, and that will be devastating for me because that's not what I want. And then one improviser, William, said, that I cannot compare scripted things like in Little Britain, for example, where every single word is thought out 100 times, and where all actors know what's going on and why are they doing it. So when you do this with someone that don't know you, it's huge chance that things might go wrong, or someone might get hurt, or might feel attacked, or whatever. And I must confess, before that, I didn't even see it like that. I was thinking, what do you mean? Like, you see how horrible I am? Like, yeah, this is now, you know, something that you can make fun of me. But usually didn't come across like that. And that was great. That was very impactful for me to understand how what I think in my brain, it's not something what others hear or see. And I have to be very careful, because the last thing on my mind is to use improv to hurt someone or to make fun of someone or to do anything that it's not, you know, nice and kind. On the other hand, now I'm gonna sound probably very paradoxal. I love roasting people. I love making fun of people that I know, and I love when they do that to me as well. So the people that know you and love you and understand your humor, and when you make a joke about them and you see they understand them, that they understand it and they laugh. Oh, this brings me so much energy. I love it. I love it. Like little things, you know, someone comes in my jam that I know and I've played many times with, and I was like, did you put this bike behind you? You know, just to brag how fit you are or something like that. I would just go on and on about something, and you see this person is laughing and know exactly that I don't give a shit about the bike or whatever. It's more like, hi, how are you, from my side. This was very important for me, this learning moment, and it needs to be a little bit censored from my side, because when I get very excited I talk stupidities. But not in 1 second or moment. This should not ever make someone feel bad. That will be completely counterproductive for me. So yeah, thank you, Whit. I hope I explained what I meant. Yeah, hopefully.
Rich asks, true or false improv? I would say improv is a truth disguised in a false.
James asks, what was your journey to become the uninhibited Zoom star? Oh, James. First of all, I had to search for this word. Second of all, yeah. I really, when I like do something, I do it a lot. So of course I'm not even near anything called star, but I'll try still to answer your question. In the beginning of pandemic, I was really addicted to Zoom improv. So I'm sure the whole community already knows me because I'm always on someone's screenshot. And I've done it like every day, every single day. And that was too much. And yeah, and then I reduced it a little bit, but still I was there. And I met so many wonderful people. So many people that kind of clicked with me. And then I realized, yeah, I think I could do something that could bring me joy, but also could others benefit from. And so a year ago, literally it was a year ago, Improv Shine came to be. And I was thinking, what is the thing that I'm good at? I'm good at gathering people, and I'm good at, creating nice energy. So what I did, I created the jam, monthly jam. It was like that from the very beginning, and it's gonna stay like that once a month, not too much, not too little. And I created jam, which is a little bit different than other jams because it contains much more music, and it contains almost no talking. So there's a lot of playing, and there's time is well spent. I'm not saying that chatting is not well spent time, but I think that, yeah, in this Zoom market, I think something like this isn't really existing. So I was very happy to provide it for my own happiness, and I guess others like it too. And then also, being someone who sees every day more and more, and before I wasn't like that, who sees every day more and more how grateful I should be and am. You know, I decided to create a podcast, which I intended, and this is exactly how it turned out to be, as a thank you to people who impacted my improv journey. So 24 episodes, I hosted 24 people, a little bit more, just to say them thank you. So it's this 3 minutes thing, it was not prepared. It was just me and them talking, laughing, and just discussing maybe one thing that I had in mind, but usually sometimes not even that. Just to say thank you. You made my improv journey nice, and I thank you for it. And that was the point of a podcast. Now, the second season that I'm planning to do, probably somewhere in February 2022, it might be a little bit different, but I still have to see if I have strength for it. Because when I plan, I have all the strength in the world. But when I need to execute it, then it's just procrastination. So yeah, that's my journey, I guess, James. This is how I became a star with 5 listeners.
Thank you. Lawrence asks, what makes me truly happy?
This sounds like a tricky question. But what makes you truly happy? Well, you, Lawrence. Actually, I'm not too far from the truth with that, because as I mentioned, some improv groups that got together during pandemic became something that you may call family. And Lawrence is a part of that. And just seeing people smiling and the way they welcome me, it makes me truly happy. I cannot explain otherwise. I've experienced some sessions, some jams where people were not like nothing bad or wrong. It's just I didn't feel seen and I didn't feel part of it, and then I stopped coming. So I don't wanna be, you know, the main star who is always talking and others have to listen. Not at all, actually. It's quite the opposite. I'm obsessed with that. Everybody has their minutes of talking and being, you know, heard. But when I know that people know me and care for me, that makes me truly happy. I think I said many times about being obsessed with sense of belonging, and I guess this is something that I was struggling with when I was younger, and now when I experience that, this hits me so hard. So, and really gets all my dopamine and other hormones of happiness really up. So yeah, I love to make other people laugh. I love to laugh, and I love making other people laugh, and that makes me truly happy.
David asks, if we love to do improv as ensembles and in teams, why do we find so much abrasion in the community? Well, first of all, David, I had a look for abrasion. I have to check what that means. But then it made sense. Well, maybe we do love improv, and we do love us, and we do love our ensembles, but not necessarily the whole community and other teams. So maybe it brings us joy that we perform, that we do things, that we are successful. But when it comes to this other part of, you know, sharing and caring and teaming up and do things together and give your time, yourself, for someone else's maybe successful support, I see this as one totally different package for most people. So yeah, people are having different reasons why they are doing improv, and people are having different expectations. So I guess as in any other community field of work, there is abrasion, so it would be perhaps weird that here isn't any. Yeah, and people are just people. So maybe too generic I'm saying this, but this is the first thing that comes to my mind. We create our own universe and our own happiness inside that, and we give our thoughts, our time to support what we created and where we feel ownership. And with others, we might not feel that. We don't feel that this has anything to do with us, and therefore there is less motivation to support each other and to develop this as a community and not as a bunch of teams working on their own.
Seki asks, what do you say to people who are on the fence about giving improv a go, saying that they're scared of the idea of being in the spotlight? Ah, Seki, you're asking the right person.
By accident, I created, I mean, quote unquote, created one thing that that I'm using now as a name for a workshop. It's called Yeah And. So it's not Yes And. It's like with a different connotation. Yeah And.
which means, oh, I'm afraid that, you know, I'm gonna be on the spotlight. Yeah, and? Or that I'm gonna make a mistake. Yeah, and? So you're gonna make mistakes or what? You know? I'm trying to show a person that, first of all, you're not here. That's what I say when I do improv workshops. You're not here to impress anyone, and not even yourself. You're here to learn. You're here to fail. You're here to have fun. You're here to try things out. And you're here to, you know, to set your boundaries. If there's something you don't want to do, that's perfectly okay. If it's something that you maybe need a little bit of push, I can push you, but all is good, you know. And I don't know, it works. So far, I haven't experienced someone who, you know, was trying and then it was like, oh, no, I won't. At least not on this workshop level. So maybe the shows is a different thing. But so I make sure that people who are having a little bit of stage fright, or in general, just talking in front of others and, you know, they have to be now clever or whatever, I make sure I give them special attention when we are on the workshops. And if even if I'm participant and someone else is hosting, I take them by the hand and we play together because I know how they feel. And I think I have, few how is the cards in my sleeve or aces in my sleeve to support them. So I've been there, I've done that, and yeah, I'm just trying to make fun of fears, but not in a bad way, not in a way that, oh, that doesn't exist or why are you afraid of. It's like, yeah, you're right, yeah, you're gonna be scared, yeah, and, you know, yeah, I mean, it's horrible to blank, and yeah, and you're gonna do it anyway because you're not here to, you know, to leave untransformed. You are here, you came here for a reason, right? And we're gonna test it out, and then from there on you'll see what comes next, what you're gonna do afterwards. So I don't know, I think this is something that that works. And of course there are many, you know, disclaimers around this, starting from the fact that I often have newbies who are not totally interested in improv, but they are interested in trying something new to put themselves out there. So improv is just one of the things that they are, you know, taking to try it out. So there is also the question of motivation, intentions, and the more I know the person, the more I find out, you know, why they're there, the better I can support.
Ari asks two questions, very similar and so different in answers. What makes a partner easy to play with and what makes a partner hard to play with? So I guess if I answer easy, then the opposite of that would be answer to what makes it hard. But let me try to dissect a little bit. I'll start with easy and try to explain the qualities. What is, so of course, if the person has 20 years of experience, it's going to be easier to play with. And if the person is, has been two times on a stage, it's going to be harder to play with because I'm one version of a newbie because I'm doing this for 3 years only. But put this on a side, I would say, partner who listens and is not trying to put their agenda is a partner that I can easily play with. So you hear me, you respond to me, and you are not ditching things we created together. So if you have this, I think we will manage. There is one thing that I always say when someone asks me what is the quality that I don't appreciate in a partner, that is being, this is how I created the name, being a commentator, which I consider someone who out of fear or ego, of just
simply not being in the moment goes out from the character and turns to into observer who's commenting my moves, you know, almost like, ah, look at her doing now this, you know, or haha, what you gonna do with that? It's like, I don't know if you have something similar as an example, but I think you'll understand what I meant by that. It's almost like the whole improv is about make-believe, right? And then you are there, putting yourself out there. Sometimes very vulnerable, sometimes less, but you're there. You're trying, you know, to do object work the best you can. You try to peel that character as convincible as it can get. Convincible, is that even a word? You know, and then someone cross their arms and just comments what you do outside of character, you know, without providing anything. And I've never left, ever seen in the rehearsal, in the show, in the workshops, and never left it. But I might leave it once because of if I get someone who's like this. I have many partners, I mean, when I'm doing workshops or doing jams as a participant, I had many of them who act out of fear and they're not listening because their senses are blocked by fear. And I don't take them too personal, you know. I play once mother my partner was my son. And we were at the striptease bar and he was so nervous and he just wanted to keep this high status of 18-year-old who's smoking, enjoying and watching women stripping. And no matter what I said, he just kept on. Like, he's not touched by anything he's not transformed by anything that is happening, you know. And I know this and this usually comes out of fear and, you know, making these blockades, you know, not to lose the status, not to lose their role. And that's okay, someone who did it maybe twice in their life. So yeah, I hope I managed to explain this. Now I'm gonna think about this probably a whole evening.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast, do share it with your friends. And to learn more about ImproShine, go to improvshine.com. Until next time.